He's duck and cover. Duck and cover.
While world leaders and presidents walked the nuclear tightrope of the Cold War, the peoples of the world made their own quiet preparations for the unthinkable. Remember Duck and Cover?
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about.
This little film was all part of something called civil defense back in the 50s and 60s. Today there are new unthinkables, and while world leaders negotiate START treaties and try to contain Iran and North Korea's proliferation of what the duck and cover idea is in the 20th century, let's think about that for a moment. How serious is the threat of a nuclear attack on American soil? How worried should we be? And if it were ever to happen, would we be prepared? Joining us now, William Broad, senior writer and science reporter for our partner, The New York Times, who has an article out today answering and addressing some of those questions. William Broad, good morning.
Hi, John. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure, yes, I would say. But should nuclear preparedness be on anyone's to-do list? And has it fundamentally changed from the duck and cover days?
It's an elaboration of duck and cover. The government has spent a lot of money studying this and has found that taking simple shelter can save a lot of lives. Fallout is nasty stuff, and the government isn't, ringing alarm bells, but it says we need a measure of prudent forethought here to think about how it is we could save as many lives as possible if the unthinkable happened.
William Broad is a senior writer and science reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Kelly McKinney also joins us, Deputy Commissioner for Planning and Preparedness at the New York City Office of Emergency Management. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, John.
Kelly, the duck and cover film reminds us of how woven into the fabric of life the Cold War was and a sense of nuclear preparedness. I can remember the civil defense symbols on schools and buildings. We were all told where we were to go in the case of an attack. We really have lost that. So I'm wondering, first of all, how important is the sense that civil preparedness is not woven into the culture in doing your job? And secondly, what kind of attack are we even thinking about? I know what the attack was back in the Cold War. I don't know if I'm sure of that now, Kelly.
Well, you're right. The nature of the threat has really changed, and as Bill talked about, in 30 years ago, the threat was from a Soviet attack that was essentially looking at annihilating large parts of the country. Now the threat is really from an improvised device, which is a much smaller device, but devastating. And the preparedness piece that you talked about is really the challenge for us, because it's not in our nature to walk around and think about a worst case scenario. But in my office, in the Office of Emergency Management, we do a lot of that public communications about these kinds of threats, and we do a lot of planning for it too.
That's Kelly McKinney, who's a Deputy Commissioner for Planning and Preparedness at the New York City Office of Emergency Management. Bill Broad, of the New York Times, it seems to me that there's a certain amount of tension in that, movies all the time talk about the ultimate unthinkable scenario of some suitcase bomb.
Right.
And so there's a sense of understanding that this is possible.
Right.
But I wonder how the government would ramp up a real civil defense program without causing a certain kind of post 9/11 hysteria. What do you make of that?
Well, these guys are approaching this extremely gingerly, right? I mean, they don't want to be alarmists. They're talking to emergency planners, and they are, they're lowballing this, right? They're not shouting it from the rooftops. On the other hand, they're trying to be prudent. We should also realize, though, too, that there's a rip-roaring debate out there among experts on whether on how real this threat is, right? I mean, there's some people that say the government has, needless jitters, and that they're overplaying this card, right? That the chance of Al Qaeda getting a bomb is like 1 in 3 billion, and that we really shouldn't worry. There's other people that say, look, the evidence is clear that they want it. They've been working at it for a long time. The leadership issues fatwas saying it's a good idea to kill 10 million Americans, and let's watch out.
So scientifically, William Broad, where am I safest based on all of the understanding we've gotten since 1945? Where am I safest in the case of a nuclear attack?
The more concrete and the more metal you can put between yourself and that radioactive fallout, the better. But the amazing thing that's coming out of the science is that even a little bit of protection helps. Like these guys at Livermore in California did lots of modeling on very fancy computers and found that even taking shelter in a car could reduce casualties by more than 50%. But if you're in a basement or, you know, of a parking structure or in the core of a large building, you know, the chances are that you're going to suffer no casualties.
Really?
Yeah, from radioactive fallout. If you're, you know, outside the immediate blast area. Right, the people at Ground Zero are going to have a bad day, no matter what. But the people a mile or two or three or four away have a much better chance of walking away from the whole thing if they take shelter.
It's William Broad, senior writer and science reporter for our partner, the New York Times. Thank you, William.
And my pleasure.
Kelly McKinney, let's finish up with you. That really suggests scientifically that the secure executive in the corner office in the high rise is the most vulnerable person in a nuclear attack. Is that about right?
Well, that person is vulnerable, but, you know, in New York City, for instance, we have a lot of concrete, steel, and brick, and we have a lot of big buildings that people can get deep inside, and that is the message for folks is that, you know, if the unthinkable happens, then quickly you get deep inside and you stay there, and you really don't have to stay there for very long. It's a matter of 8 to 12 hours, and then, as Bill said, it's a very survivable event.
And getting that information out is really the challenge for your organization over the next, 5 years or so, right?
Absolutely, and that's what we do. And, we have a Ready New York program that pushes that message every day to hundreds of people around the city and around the region as well.
And it's not just a New York story. There are programs like this in cities all over the United States. Kelly McKinney, Deputy Commissioner for Planning and Preparedness at the New York City Office of Emergency Management, talking about nuclear preparedness in the 21st century, long after the duck and cover era.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.